Hello there. You're about ready to listen to a very special sneak peek of our Patreon-exclusive show, Spider-Versity. This is the show where Sal from Comic Pop and myself explore every aspect of Spider-Man media, including every Spider-Man movie, even the spinoffs like Venom and Morbius, and now Spider-Man the Animated Series. So if you enjoy this episode and would like to check out the rest, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Enjoy the show. Everybody, and welcome back to Spider-Versity. This is the show where we talk about Spider-Man. I am your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Sal. Hey, Sal.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm fantastic. I'm spectacular, you might say.
Listen, I'm spectacular, too, because what we're talking about, we're done with Spider-Man the Animated Series. And, Sal, I don't know if you had moments like this, but there was moments where I was like, especially when you see, I guess a lot of people were revisiting it. And there's a lot of people, like, I saw some tweets that, like, Spider-Man the Animated Series is where cartoons peaked. And it's like, all right. But I had moments where I was like, am I being too hard on this show?
Right.
Is the nature of what, am I being too hard on it? And then we finished that show, and now we're starting Spectacular Spider-Man. And it's like, no, I was not being too hard on Spider-Man the Animated Series because this show exists.
Out of the gate. Really quick aside about the 94 Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah.
I was leafing through my Wizard magazine from 25 years ago, as you did.
Uh-huh.
And there's a little blurb in it where it talks about upcoming cartoons. They're talking about the triumph of the Silver Surfer animated series and how great that show is.
Yes.
And how the last episode of the Spider-Man cartoon show, the series finale, was a complete and utter failure. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
People didn't like it. There was just a little blurb where they're like, I don't know who watching this cartoon, who isn't a super nerd like the rest of us, is going to recognize Stan Lee. Like, are they going to care that that happened?
Like, interesting,
because for children they're just gonna be like, oh, and then Spider-Man meets an old man and then swings around with him for 20 minutes, like, who cares? And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And then I remembered, like, Stan was a deep cut back then. Stan had to use his publicist to get into properties. It wasn't like people were like, oh, let's get Stan Lee, you know. Mm-hmm. Nerds were like, let's get Stan Lee, but no one was thinking out loud like, we should get Stan Lee, you know. I remember in Mallrats, Kevin Smith said, like, you know, a comic book legend enters and, like, you know, mentors Brody. But, like, he assumed it was going to be a made up character. And then Jim Jacks was like, I know Stan Lee. And he's like, oh, well, that would be awesome. But like, it wasn't a we got to get Stan Lee. I mean, look at X-Men 2000. Mm-hmm. You know, just not to tie it in with another show we do over on
exactly Mutant Academy. You're popping in every third. Yeah, exactly. Every third Wednesday.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/onlystupidanswers.
But like, they were like, oh, yeah, we'll put Stan in there out of focus for one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting a hot dog. End of story. Yeah. Like, they didn't care. So I was like, that's funny that they were like, yeah, no, the show died horribly. And I was like, wow. That, for most people, that's like the pinnacle of the show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, for after the first season, it was a long slog till we got to those last two episodes. You're like, wait a second. Are these pretty good? Are these
are people having fun
good?
Again? We're not talking about vampires.
You know, it's a good example of how time makes fools of us all.
True.
And there's a lot of, like, I mean, we'll see with the state of social media or whatever, but, like, it takes on stuff where you're like, well, this isn't, you all are talking about how great this is. I'm going to tell you right now, this isn't going to age great.
Star Wars prequels. That's the number one where I'm like, I'm wrong. Like, according to the world.
But for
20 years, I was right.
Well, listen, man, have you seen the new Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Okay. I was listening to a podcast and they were ripping into it, and I thought it was fine. I didn't have strong feelings about it. But in talking about it, they were talking about, in comparison, about how Crystal Skull's better. I'm like, well, that's incorrect. I get that it was the last time we had Lucas and Spielberg on together, and I appreciate that. But also, it is not good. It is not a good movie.
It is not. No. You do miss the Spielberg moments. Like, I miss, you know, the intro to Crystal Skull with, like, the whole hound dog chase scene.
Yeah.
I can feel Spielberg. You know, it's so good, even though it barely has anything to do with the story. Mm-hmm, and it's a shame. My wife actually pointed out this really important fact, and then we'll move on. But, like, both Indiana Jones sequels failed at the opening action sequence.
Yeah.
The reason why they failed is because both action sequences in both movies, this is how you know they're the bad ones. And by bad, I mean, you know, Dial of Destiny is just compared to Last Crusade and Raiders.
It's Last Crusade. Man, listen, they literally ride off into the sunset in Last
it's
Crusade.
It's perfect. I don't care if you can see things and makeup. I don't care. Yeah. I want to see that in that, like, with that kind of movie. Yeah. But both action sequences have everything to do with the main story.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Not how it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
You open it with a unrelated adventure.
Yeah. You're like in media res, he's doing something else. That's a that's a great point. I was thinking, I really think off topic. Sorry, listen, if anything, you guys are here for the tangents too. I was thinking about this a lot because I was listening to this podcast. I was like, okay, so you know, you start thinking about like, okay, what doesn't work for you, what you think could have worked.
Right.
And I really thought, even when I was watching, I'm like, Indiana Jones needed his own Creed. He needed, like, I'm mentor guy now. I'm not, and it's a little trickier because you don't have, like, the way Ryan Coogler introduced Adonis, Creed. It's so organic. Like, and it's hard to recreate that. But here's what I was thinking, because I hated the de-aging shit.
Yes, terrible.
And all these movies kind of delay the Indy reveal. So we start off an unrelated adventure. We build up to what we feel like is the indie reveal, but who's the reveal? Short Round.
Right.
Keke Kwan returns as Short Round in that opening sequence. Cause this is the problem. And I think I ranted about this with you before.
Yeah.
Even Indiana Jones's kid sidekick is too old to be the new Indiana Jones. That's the problem with trotting these 80-year-olds out. So in that opening sequence, you kill Short Round. You reveal, but you have this moment where you celebrate Keke Kwan and you celebrate his capabilities and you say, like, here's what Short Round's been up to, inspired by Indiana Jones. And then Indiana Jones meets his godson, which is Keke Kwan's son or goddaughter. My only concern with goddaughters, it probably would have been Awkwafina. And I'm like, don't do that.
Don't do that.
And I was actually thinking, like, so who do you get? And I was like, oh man, Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians, Snake Eyes, bunch of stuff. He'd be a great James Bond. And you make him the new, like, you kind of, like, that's the whole, even though Phoebe Waller-Bridge is fantastic in the movie, you can kind of build something around that. But now you don't have de-aging. Now you allow, like, just let Harrison Ford be 80, man. Like, he can't do this shit.
No. I mean, all respect, because there are sequences where he's, like, doing things, and I'm like, that's really cool. And it doesn't look like, you know, the first Spider-Man movie where it's just a CG body flailing around. Like, he doesn't look bad. In fact, in Crystal Skull, he looks like he's spry. He's moving around, and I appreciate that. They don't do that thing where he's, like, doing it. It's a chase scene, he's running, and everyone's just going slower because he can't be fast. He keeps up, and it's all a testament to his love of the character and his desire to be there, but, they don't make the... Okay, this is not the kind of movies that they make, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't... Unforgiven is not a franchise film.
They
don't make movies about old cowboys who are here, who are 80, right? Yeah. First of all, those kind of gunslingers don't live to be 80. But if they did, his story would not be about going on yet another adventure. I'm going to stop these cattle rustlers. No, it's about, like, either his death or his revenge or revenge on him. But there's always going to be some next generation, or it just ends and everything dies.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's weird. Thankfully there are no more.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Weird that it's like, okay, we're going to trot this franchise out again. After 15 years of a movie. So, like, there's a whole generation of people that the only one that came out in their lifetimes was the bad one.
Right. Like, that's the point.
And so it's like, anyway, but listen, we're not talking about Indiana Jones Day. We're talking about Spectacular Spider-Man. I don't even know how we got on that tangent, but you're welcome, everybody. You're
welcome.
Thank
God we are talking about Spider-Man, because if we talked about Indiana Jones, we would be destitute.
Yeah, exactly. But listen, all I'll say is three perfect movies.
Yes.
Like, when it comes time to show my kids, this is what I did. My wife hadn't seen Indiana Jones. I was like, here are the three movies. She's like, there's no other ones? No.
Nope.
I had to, because she was excited for the new one, so I had to finally watch Crystal Skull with her. But, like, here's the three. Yeah, are they dated in some racism stuff? 100%.
Granted, I'm sorry. It's just
we're gonna have to accept and move on. But as far as action blockbusters, fucking gold. Anyway,
yep, gold standard.
Speaking of gold, there's my transition. We're talking about Spectacular Spider-Man, which also, here to make us feel a little bit old, Sal, came out in 2008.
Oh yeah, on the cusp, right as the MCU was getting started, before Disney owned Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also for context, so I don't know about, I think we talked about a little bit this before, Sal. For this, I believe it's on, for people keeping up with us, I believe it's on Disney Plus.
It is indeed.
Fantastic. But for a little bit of context, I busted out my Blu-rays for this, and there was a little sticker on it that I hadn't removed that was, hey, here, you get, sign up to get free tickets to Amazing Spider-Man 2. Which nice. Came out in 2014. I'm going to double check that.
Yeah, right.
So,
I think
so
you're
for
right.
For context of this, this show came out in 2008, and I was not able to get the Blu-ray until 2014.
I'm still waiting for a Death to Smoochie Blu-ray. They haven't made one yet. You know, like there are some shows we don't get. Movies, shows we don't get Blu-rays.
I don't think there is a way. This was true a little bit ago. I think it's to watch Dogma.
No, well, there was a Blu-ray, and there's no streaming. It's not available.
Yeah,
you can watch
it's
it
not streaming,
on YouTube.
But I don't. But if you get the Blu-ray, it's like a fucking. You have to spend like $50 on it or something.
That's right. That's right.
It's the same thing with. I had to get. I wanted to watch the original Bob Hoskins Super Mario Brothers movie again because the new Super Mario Brothers. And by the way, I still fucking stand by that, especially compared to the new one. But anyway, I had to get a DVD, and it was one of those where like. So I'm watching my big widescreen TV. And the picture's this.
Oh, no.
And it's like, this is my only, like, there's no other, unless, again, if I'm willing to pop $50 for, like, the Japanese version of the Blu-ray.
Which is not going to happen. Yeah.
Which is not going to happen. So, and unfortunately, we're now getting into an era where it feels like this is going to become increasingly common.
Yes.
And we don't need to get into all that. But for those that don't know, you probably heard a lot of praise for this show. And unfortunately, it came at a bad time. It came at this time where the era of kids' cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons, although I think I saw it because my sister was watching something in the morning and it came on and I'm like, what? You know, I saw the ads. I wasn't impressed with the animation or whatever. Nope. And then I actually sat down and I was watching and I was like, wait. Is this good? Is this like really good?
That was exactly my reaction. And it's a golden age because Earth's Mightiest Heroes is running concurrently. So you got like these two you know what else came a little earlier than that was the Hulk versus Wolverine and Hulk versus Thor movies. And I'm like, is Marvel figuring it out?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Iron Man had just dropped and it's like, oh my God, like it's time, baby.
Yeah.
And then everything got broken. But
Well, there was that like moment where they were starting to figure stuff out. But the difficulty with this one is I want to say it was Fox or whatever. And then one point when it got moved to Disney XD, we'll talk about it more. Like literally the final episode on Disney XD aired without audio.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was a whole thing. But you know, and this show unfortunately got unceremoniously canceled for a variety of reasons. And I'd have to dive into like the specifics, but from memory,
right,
it was a combination of, we're at a stage where I think this is right as, at least maybe between seasons one and two, Disney bought Marvel.
Uh-huh.
So Sony, and I don't know the legalese behind it, was like to secure their movie rights, they sold off the animation rights.
That's right.
So now Sony can't make more seasons of the show.
No, they can't.
But Marvel can't because Sony owns all the assets to this particular show.
Yeah.
And then... and then the toys weren't selling well, and that was apparently still a metric we cared about at this point for animated shows. It's the same thing that would kill Green Lantern, the animated series, which was actually really good, and for a time killed Young Justice, which was Greg Weisman's follow-up to this show.
Yeah.
And Greg Weisman's a name we will be bringing up more often. I don't know that he's the creator of Gargoyles, but he's definitely
the creator of Gargoyles.
Was he the creator? I definitely know he was the creative voice behind, like, what you like about Gargoyles is Greg Weisman.
Yes.
Yes. And then
he invented Gargoyles. He invented the Adventures of the Gummy Bears for Disney Afternoon or for the Disney lineup.
Whatever.
Which, by the way, if you ever look, you'll see that the same color and complement of Gargoyles to Gummy Bears. Like, there's a parallel there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Weisman is he is nerd savior. He invented Gargoyles, Spectacular Spider-Man, and Titans.
And Young Justice.
Young Justice, that's what it is.
Young Justice,
And it's like, that's... I mean, and listen, like, I didn't watch a lot of Young Justice, but I did like watch, I think, half a first season, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I just didn't know when the hell it was on, and I didn't have the patience or the wherewithal to continue watching.
Yeah, Young Justice. I've watched all of Young Justice. Very good. It's cool because it gives its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness in that it gives a broad view of like, here's this version of the DC universe, but sometimes that's too much. I think I can't remember the seasons now, but I think it was season 4 or 5. I don't remember how many seasons they did, but one of the seasons, they finally siphoned it off like into arcs where each arc's focused on a different group because I think that was many characters.
Yeah, that must have been for the streaming when they like resurrected the show. Because I remember my team over at Absolutely Marvel and DC complaining about how like that was a thing that they were doing.
Oh, really? I liked it. I thought it was.
A lot of them liked it, but I'm just saying like it was a source of contention because it was like you'd be like, oh, I just watched the Roy segment and now I won't see him until like they decide deal with it again. Wiseman made this show.
Yep. And in the chat, John Lieber says, I love this tangent show. Thank you, John. If you want to watch live, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. So that's kind of where we're at. 2008. This is Sony's new stab at, and actually might be their first and only, Sony's particularly first and only stab at an animated Spider-Man show.
Yeah.
Greg Weissman is coming off of, I don't know that there's anything between Gargoyles and this. Gargoyles, I think, went off the air in the 90s.
Right. And I'm sure he worked on other things, but it's like, it wasn't, nothing celebrated and beloved. You know what I mean?
And we start with, this is season one, episode one, Survival of the Fittest. We actually start with an homage to Gargoyles as Spidey is swinging through the city. He runs across some legally not actionable gargoyles.
Oh my god.
Legally distinct gargoyles.
I saw one. He sticks to one and he breaks it, and I was like, that's Broadway.
Yep.
I didn't know there were other gargoyles. That's awesome.
Hey, listen, if you're paying attention, they're there. And we learn immediately, and this is such a great choice, that Peter has been Spider-Man for the summer.
Yeah.
This show doles out exposition so seamlessly. Spidey's been doing this for a minute now. He runs across O'Hearn and Flint Marko. Again, we're already laying the seeds for future stories. Mm-hmm. And he's foiling a robbery, and these are clearly people he stopped before. These guys are serial offenders. God, I love the way this show... Why didn't we get like 6 seasons of this show? Anyway.
I know.
Spidey stops them, and we get Hammerhead... remember when like fucking Spider-Man animated series would be like, here's Lizard and Scorpion and they're fighting over Silvermane for a time tablet. this incorporates all these characters so seamlessly. Because I think, and we'll see this more as the show goes on, because I think the thought process is like, okay, here's what we're building to. We want Spider-Man to stop these thieves to key off this plot with the big man. How about instead of just random thieves, we lay the seeds for Rhino and Sandman. Perfect. Go for it.
Yep. No, it's you're watching the show. You're sucked in. You're enjoying the characters. And before you know it, there's like 6 villains on the screen.
Yes.
Not quite yet, but like, you know, just like 3 or 4. We've introduced a number of characters, some of whom we won't even see for 2 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just this guy. I mean, and this episode's written by Weissman. So you're like, just a masterclass of introducing you to a character you've seen 1,000 times, you know, every adventure of, but still you are invested.
Yep. 100%. And Amber shows defeat to the big man. Should we treat the reveal as a big man, like a spoiler, or should we treat it as people who've watched the rest of the show?
I mean, I think if you've never watched Spectacular Spider-Man, you're not going to be convinced by this show. You know what I mean? I mean, you will, but you've probably seen it.
All right.
I think more people know the story around the big man than they know episodes the big man appears in this show.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. The interesting thing about this is I was convinced, because in this episode, it's voiced by Keith David. It is not voiced by Keith David in the rest of the show. I think this is the only episode Keith David did. Because we discussed it before and I looked it up, and it's actually Kevin Michael Richardson for most of the show. And he's great.
He's great, and
I do love
and he plays like 4 characters in the show.
Yep.
but no, it's Keith David makes perfect sense. I assume he was busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably, or maybe they just didn't have the budget for it. Right. And originally the plot line was this was going to be Kingpin, but they couldn't because Daredevil had the rights to that. Yeah. Although I think the solution they came up with is also great. And they call in, for everybody's favorite Spider-Man villains, the Enforcers.
Who doesn't love the Enforcers? Like, essentially a rodeo-themed suite of bad guys from, like, that looked dated in 1964.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. With names like Fancy Dan.
Fancy Dan. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Deep cuts, everybody. Deep cuts.
Yeah.
So, Peter walks in, he hears May talking to Anna about Ben and their finances. We're laying the groundwork for the fact that Ben has passed away. Mm-hmm. We get introduced to one of the many transitions this show utilizes, and I will say one of the weirdest one, which is a bunch of spiders running across the screen.
Yeah, it never gets not creepy.
Yeah. It's like, hey, listen, we're not saying this is a perfect show, okay, everybody? We're just saying it nails it where it counts.
Yeah. Well, they love it. Like, the thing is, you could tell, like, they're all excited to be working on this show. You know?
Yes.
Yes! How about spiders? Like, there's a moment at the end of every episode, I know I'm getting ahead of myself, and I won't talk about plot, but, like, at the end of... I think they'll start doing it a lot more as the show progresses. I don't think it happens in the first two episodes, but maybe it does, where the episode will end. It'll, like, cut to, like, a static shot of whatever they're doing, and then, like, the background will just replace with Spider-Man's face.
Yes.
And, like, you could tell they're like, this is... Because they used to do that in the old Lee Ditko books where, you know, it would end and then Spider-Man's, like, face would be, like, the sky, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like he's the looming problem Peter Parker will always have to deal with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the show loves, like, the people love this show and they're like, who this? How about this? What about that? Everything is working. Like,
they clearly love, like, stuff from references from Lee Ditko all the way to Ultimate Spider-Man, which was at its heyday at this time.
Yeah.
Like, everything's on the table. It's like, how do we remix this stuff in a way that works with what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And all the choices are just so solid. We'll get into actually the second. There's a couple villain origins, so I'm like, well, I'm not as big a fan of that. But but again, the stuff where it matters, and I love that, especially at this stage in the story, the stakes are so low and personal.
Yes.
But they're really. We'll get into it. Adrian Toomes, voiced by Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger himself, is talking to Doc Ock before it's Octavius. It's before he's Doc Ock, voiced by Peter McNichol, who's a famous character actor and is perfect here. He's complaining because he feels like his tech is being taken by Norman Osborn, who shows up. He's taken over Tech Flight, which I feel like, I don't know if the show ever spells this out, but the implication is this is Vulture's tech is where Green Goblin's glider tech comes from.
Yep.
Fucking great.
Laying the groundwork. Great idea.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep.
And Osborn's justification, by the way, he's like, you never got it to work. You're not going to do it at 80. And I'm like, he's not wrong.
Sorry, Adrian. He's not wrong.
Oh, and I was like, who is Osborn? What is his voice? I know this voice. God, what is it? It's the Clock King from Batman the Animated Series. He's
amazing.
Tempest Fugit. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing. Anyway. And again, all the voice, you know, where you know, when we're watching a Spider-Man animated series, we're like, that voice is a choice. That the choice
right,
is happening.
A weird one where they're like, let's get Abe Vigoda in this show.
Yeah. This everything was like, perfect. Nailed it. This is again, it really feels like you remember that Batman animated series that aired at the same time at the Spider-Man one, but was like way better. What if we did that? What if we did Spider-Man like that?
Yeah, where we just respected our animated voices. Like, the cast is just people who are great at doing voices. You know them. Like, they were like, oh, let's get the woman who plays Phil and Lil from Rugrats to do Martha, but have her, like, really, like, be sad, you know? Mm-hmm. There are so many voices. You're like, I know that. I know the character. That's such an amazing thing. Yeah. Great.
So we cut to Peter's high school. We are introduced to his pals, which is, of course, Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn.
Awesome.
Great moment. So in a lot of media, Peter gets his powers, new confidence, and normally it works out for him. I love in this where it's like, listen, man, you're Spider-Man, but that's not going to fix all your problems. He goes to ask out Sally Avril, which I am not familiar with from the comics, but I do know. I remember when the show was on, Greg Weisman was like, if a character gets a name, they are from the comics. If you hear
they sure are.
Name, they're from the comics.
They are, yeah. Sally Avril was retconned to be a character who appeared in the series Untold Tales of Spider-Man from Kurt Busiek. She's just another one, you know, like in Midtown, there were a lot of girls like Liz Allen and just girls like were popular and gave people a hard time, like Peter Parker. Sally was one of them. She eventually was inspired by Spider-Man to become a superhero called the Blue Jay, and she dies.
Great.
And Peter, Peter internalizes her because, you know, she was inspired by him to put on a costume, and she is shot by a criminal and just dies. And he's like, you know, and he internalized that. That's like, because, you know, I think Busiek was trying to explain, like, you know, he's a libertarian in the first like 10 episode issues of the book. And then he's like a fun loving character, but then he's also like really unhappy and miserable.
Yeah.
How do we square that circle? And it's like, yeah, he doesn't really care, but then he suddenly does care. And here's why. And Sally doesn't play any role outside of just being in, like, she's a new character they invented for that, like, retcon series. It's weird, cool pull. Should have been Betty Brant in the MCU trilogy.
Yeah.
Instead of just putting Betty Brant in there and making her look like Gwen Stacy.
Confusing. Oh, and it is a bummer. We talked a lot about the Spider-Man animated series, how much other things pulled from that. And things after this did seemingly pull from this, but it was like the wrong things. Like, what if Electro got his powers from eels? It's like, is that what you got out of this?
Right? Like, what?
Damn it.
Yeah. And as we know, you know, Hollywood just watches these cartoons for ideas for how to make their movies and stuff. That must have been what happened here.
Yeah.
At first, I thought this was synergy with Sony, where I was like, oh, they're doing the Electric Eel thing. But then as you pointed out, 2008.
Yeah.
That's not Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Mm-mm. That's before. That's because I thought they were more, thought they were closer together. They were not. Yeah, Peter goes to ask Sally Avril out, and even though he feels more confident, her opinion of him has not changed.
No, because nobody else knows he's Spider-Man.
Yes. he gets clowned by Flash and the other jocks, despite his spider abilities. It's like, yeah, this is good. This is smart. So I don't think we've revealed this at this point, but we get a scene with Peter and Gwen and their biology teacher, who is Miles Warren.
Is he Miles Warren? Because he's a voice. Like he's a very specific choice. And I was like, okay, maybe he's somebody. I didn't catch the name.
They reveal at some point it is Miles Warren, which was going to be a plot line later on. That unfortunately, and this is, I apologize for everybody following the show with us, this will be a trend. It is a plot line that they do not get to follow up on. Basically, Dr. Connors has... So, for those keeping track... Within the first episode, we've gotten proto versions of Sandman, Rhino, Vulture, Green Goblin, two Green Goblins technically, Jackal, and the Lizard. Oh, and we're about ready to get Venom.
Don't forget the Enforcers and one of the Enforcers becomes a guy.
Yeah. So and again, you don't feel any of it. Watching this was like, can we not? Because you'll notice when we talk about these episodes, they're actually mini arcs, because this was a weird stage in movies where they would bundle episodes together in like 3-episode DVDs.
Yes.
It's like animated movies that they would sell at like Walmart and shit. But it made me wonder, like, could we not do this with live action movies? Where it's like there's one overarching story. But for like in 20-minute increments, like for this 20 minutes, he's fighting Vulture. For this 20 minutes, he's fighting Shocker. And they're all integrated into the same overarching story. But it's not like, here's the one. We got to build a whole 2-hour movie around Electro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not a rhetorical question. Could we not do that? Is that not something we could do?
Right. I mean, I feel like they were playing with that idea with at least with Homecoming, where it's like, all right, here's Prowler, here's Shocker, here's Vulture, like here's the Tinkerer.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I was like, this is how I want to see it. Like, it's unmistakably connected to the universe, despite your time jump, which you still haven't fixed. What is the matter with you?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, here are all these characters, and here's all this like. All this world building to set things up and shorten the amount of time we need Norman Osborn to be crawling on the floor going, I don't know if I can do it. Like, no, let's just have him be in a goblin suit by like act two, please.
Yeah. I, you're right. They did experiment with that in Homecoming. And then they forgot about that. But it's this. Yeah. Anyway, something future Spider-Man directors consider. Please? Consider these things. Low stakes. Maybe cycle in more minor villains through your more major arc.
Yes. Yes.
Especially with how we'll get to it in a little bit. How they incorporate. How they explain the abundance of supervillains in this universe is perfect.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. Smart.
Because that's something Greg Weisman is really good. It's not like, I'm not going to just throw shit at you. Why is this happening?
Yeah.
Why are there, and it carried over in the Young Justice too. How do we justify some of these things that are core concepts that we're not going to do the show without them, but is there a narrative reason we can justify it that at least makes sense? You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not there yet. Getting ahead of myself. So they're going to be interns, Doc Connors. This reminds Peter of a field trip to Doc Connors, flashback to Origin, done and done and done. We're moving on.
No. I love that. They're like, with Dr. Connors, they're like, yeah, he's a lizard, moving on. Like, he'll be lizard before you know it, but like, you get it.
He does biology stuff. This is where the spider that bit Peter came from. You get it. Makes sense. We don't need to build a whole movie around explaining it. It wasn't that his dad was doing secret tests on him. Anyway.
Oh my God. They would never consider that back then. Back then they were like, why would anyone bother?
Yes. Peter's at Harry's when Norman shows up Norman has a catchphrase in this episode is like, don't apologize. I never do.
What a creeper.
Yeah. Maybe you should. And right then is when the vulture attacks and we get into one of the trends that I don't love about this show, and it's not that it's unique to this show, it's just for the most part the show's better than this, is the hackneyed ways villains come up with, I'm this villain name now. It's like, you don't need to do that. We could just call the guy Electro. I don't know that he needs to announce it to everybody.
they don't need to talk in third person. They never need to reveal who they are. When Spidey's fighting Electro, like he just calls him that because it's a fun nickname to give him. And then he's like, what did you call me? Oh, I like that. Like, we don't need that. Cut that part. He just does that. And then everyone else calls him that. It sticks. That's how nicknames work.
So easy. It's so like, it's something they like, they made a huge deal out of this in Arrow, like what to call Arrow. And it's like, I don't know, man, fucking criminals are showing up pincushions for Green Arrows. Maybe call him the Green Arrow Vigilante. And then it's just, you shorten it to Green Arrow, boom, he's Green Arrow. I don't know that we need to think about it that hard.
Well, like, literally, the Star City Gazette, or whatever the hell the newspaper was there, would just be like, Green Arrow found at scene. And it's just, oh, that's it, that's it.
That's Green Arrow, done, moving on. But in this case, I do like the joke here, because when Norman Osborn was dismissive of Adrian, he called him a buzzard, Adrian Toomes misremembers it, and it's like, what did you call me? A vulture? And he's like, Norman's like, no, dude, I called you a buzzard.
I like that.
Yeah, that's the one time it's like, for the, I will allow it for this joke.
Yes, but they keep doing it. Like at least I think they knock it off. I don't recall, but I'm happy to find out.
Yeah,
where they just like, what did you call me? Oh, I'm gonna call myself that now. I'm gonna own it. And I'm like, all right.
Sure, whatever. So Spidey saves Osborn. I will say, I'm gonna yada yada through a lot of the action scenes. Just know that they're uniformly usually pretty dope. They're usually
pretty fucking cool.
There's just not a lot to like break down. It's just like, remember when Spider-Man did that cool web thing? It was cool. You know what I mean? It's just they're cool. Just
yeah, exactly. That's how I feel too.
Yeah, and it's also I think like a lot of people, I think there was a little hurdle because the animation wasn't necessarily what people wanted, but it was a choice in that it allowed them, the more simplistic style allowed them more fluidity in the action sequences. And in my opinion, a very valuable trade-off, because the action sequences are pretty fucking cool.
They are cool, and like, there's not a hint of reused animation.
Nope.
And it's just, that's what's the thing, right? Like, all we want is just for it to look consistent and fun. Like, it doesn't have to break the mold. Like, it, you know, across the Spider-Verse, it's transcendental in its action sequences and blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, that's a whole ass movie that cost a lot of money for an animated project.
Yep.
This is a cartoon show that's selling action figures. I get it, but you know, just somewhere in between the movie and what we got here is good. Like, I'm happy with just a fun little action sequence. And I was not wild about the animation style I was not wild about the design style.
Yeah.
When I first saw this, I was like, oh, we're doing one of these. So for whatever reason, there was like a very small period of time where like that was like a thing. That was like an it design style. And I was like, oh, I don't, I don't really care for that. But yeah, the show is so gripping and the voice acting is so good. And yeah, the like the, just the just you are sucked in. You're just yeah, like, oh. And because the animation is so fluid and so quick and so simple, like you fill in blanks where there might be, and you're just into it.
Yeah.
You're, I don't know. Yeah. You forgive any blemishes this show may have because mm-hmm, it's just yeah, so well made. It's so well yes, written.
Yep. 100%. So we get during this whole fight between Spidey and Vulture, we get a brief glimpse of two cops who are, I have the other cop's name later, but the one talking is Gene DeWolf.
Oh.
Again, just Easter eggs for days in the show.
Just in case they're like, well, what if we want to, like, what if we want to do Gene DeWolf? Then we'll just, we've already introduced her, moving on, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, again,
what if
I think
we want to do that?
I think it's an instinct that I wish more projects like this would follow, which is why waste it? Why just yes, have a random cop when there's like two dozen in Marvel Comics that's that we true, could use? Like, why not? Like,
yeah.
And this, and I think the greatest example is, I won't do spoilers, but like, they'll do things like, how do I say this? Well, it was stuff with the Black Cat where it's like, well, yeah, or like Silvermane, where the characters have similar theming.
Mm-hmm.
What if they were connected? Like, why wouldn't they be? Like, even though in the comics, these characters were created decades apart.
Uh-huh.
In the show, it's all together, so maybe there should be a connection there, so it's not redundant.
I agree. No, yeah, it's that kind of thing that they failed at in a Spider-Man comic called Spider-Man Chapter 1, where they were like, Spider-Man and Sandman have weird... Or Osborn and Sandman have weird hair.
Yes.
Similarly weird hair. What if they were related? What? That's no, your man, connection?
Yeah.
But no, I like the idea of, like, one's a cat burglar, the other one's a cat burglar.
Yeah.
One's an old man, one's a young woman. Put yeah, them together. I'm like, yeah, yes. Yeah. I, for the longest time as a kid, I thought they were.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yep, what? Not?
So back at Connor's lab, Spidey saves the day. Back at Connor's lab, we meet Eddie Brock. So we find out he's a college freshman. It seems like he was the quarterback before Flash, and he yeah, kind of was a big brother figure that protected Peter.
Yes.
What are your thoughts? We'll probably get into this more as we get closer to the Venom. What are your thoughts on how they utilize Venom in this show? Or I mean, Eddie, I should say specifically Eddie in this show.
Eddie is, it's Ultimate Eddie. It's yeah, it's another version of Ultimate Eddie. The idea being that like Eddie and Peter are closer in age, that they knew each other when they were younger, that they had some kind of connection with each other's past. Although it seems like they're doing everything they can to not do what they would do with those movies where they're like, oh no, like mm-hmm, Peter's parents were super scientists who did yes, this, that, and the other thing. Like, cause that's the origin of the Ultimate Universe as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the Ultimate Universe, like the Venom suit is made from like, It's a cancer suit that Peter's father and Eddie's father make together.
Yeah.
But you know, so when Peter's investigating the suit, he tracks down Eddie, who is in college and older than him.
Yeah.
And so they have this kind of like connection because they both are orphans and their parents knew each other. So they kind of like, Peter is hoping for like a brother figure.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out, obviously. Mm-hmm. In this, they're like, what if it was cleaner and more friendly, like more yeah, tragic?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what it is. And that's what the show is, where it's like, yeah, we could do that, but like, what if it was cleaner and more tragic?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's
I'm
just
like,
the
yes,
modus operandi for the show. I will say, for the longest time, even as a kid in the 90s, as a big Venom fan,
yeah,
the Brock of it, kind of similar, we'll get into this when we get in the Shocker episode, the person in the suit matters less to me, mattered yeah, less to me. And mm-hmm, so, but I was thinking about this more with, we're getting Spider-Man 2 coming to PS5.
Yeah.
And the like, Eddie Brock's not going to be Venom. It's going to be a different character. It looks like they're setting it up to be a mystery, which could be interesting. But yep, it was the first time where I was like, you know what? I've kind of been convinced that the Eddie of it does matter.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I kind of think, I think there's some juice in the idea of, you know, you do the black costume saga and then he gets rid of it and then Venom shows up and it's like there's a whole mystery. Who is Venom?
Yes.
And then you reveal it and it's oh! Peter's like, I don't know who the fuck this is. And then Eddie's like, you don't know. You've ruined my life. And then you flash back to all these times where like Spider-Man yeah, inadvertently just by doing his shit. Like I kind of think of like an extrapolation of that line from Across the Spider-Verse where it's like you'd all these quips, but you never think about the person on the other side of them and how they feel.
Yeah.
Where it's like it's somebody that Peter doesn't even fucking know. But and obviously, I think the interesting thing with Eddie is you do a line of like taking personal responsibility. Like, yeah,
yes,
Peter made mistakes, but you made some decisions too. And yeah, and what I think, as much as I kind of like the idea, I guess the Venom movies have sold me on the idea of Eddie kind of being a dipshit.
Mm-hmm.
what they do here that I think moving forward, I hope more people take from if we're redoing Venom Origins is, and we'll get into this more as it goes on, is the way that Peter doesn't necessarily make the wrong decisions or bad decisions or selfish decisions, but the decisions he makes does negatively impact Eddie and people around Eddie, which builds resentment. It's like, that's smart, because that's always been a key, again, great power grooms, great responsibility. That's always been a key component of Spider-Man, and having a character embody the fallout from all that is smart.
No, there's a book, Spider-Man Reign. I hate it. I think it's terrible. And it's entirely derivative. The idea is what if kills... Dark Knight Returns, but Spider-Man fart?
Yeah, it's where he kills MJ with his radioactive sperm.
Yeah, that's right. That's the one. So it's like great ideas like that. But but in the end, he fights Venom. And spoilers. And and Venom is like, you always go on about responsibility. I'm the one thing you never took responsibility for.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love that so much. Like the idea that, because I mean, and by the way, like he's right, but also like he's wrong because he's a full grown adult with like real decision making abilities.
Yeah.
Like you didn't have to kill anybody, man. What the hell's your problem? But I love like, because, you know, the idea of like Eddie being the opposite of Peter, like he always projects, he never takes responsibility for himself.
Yeah.
But Peter is responsible for him because like, you did bring an alien here and then just got rid of it. Like you thought that was like a thing you could do. And it's like, not like, you know, it was whether you did all the right things is irrelevant.
Yeah.
You did this, you brought it back.
Yeah.
And you took it to, you know, the free clinic, and you raised the hybrid like puppies, you know, you did all the things you're supposed to do. You brought it to Reed Richards.
Yeah.
But it is the trail starts with you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, Donny Cates and forth changed that entirely, where it's like it would never be about you, Peter. It's all about Venom and King and Black and stuff. But like for a time, it was like it was his fault.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't necessarily something he chose to do, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the secret. I like that aspect. Cause again, I think Venom's tie to Spider-Man is important. Obviously,
we haven't
been able to do that in the movies for whatever reason. But I also think as much as I like this version, I do think it'd be cool if Eddie was like almost the equivalent of anybody that watched Avatar: The Last Airbender, the Cabbage Man, like just this guy that just ended up like just because of the random Spider-Man bullshit, just kept getting kind of fucked over, and so it was like, you know what, fuck this shit, all right?
Yeah.
Now I have this alien costume. I'm fucking pissed at you. And Spider-Man having to figure out who this guy even is, but that's not what we have here. They're former friends, kind of like you were talking about, like a brother figure.
Exactly.
We see Kurt has a robotic prosthetic.
And that kind of like changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's also weird. What does it do? Because like when Peter goes to shake his hand, he gives his not prosthetic hand.
I know. Like, but you have a hand, though.
Yeah. Is it for show? Because I actually don't know that
we see him use it.
We see him use it?
Well, it's a robot hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I feel like it has to be opposable.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's weird. Because later he'll pick up his son with both hands, like he's never been able to do it before.
Yeah,
and I'm but you do have a hand, though. Like,
yeah.
But I think it's an arm, right? It starts here. So
it starts higher up on the the arm.
So maybe it doesn't have. I don't know. I can't remember if I've seen him like wiggle his fingers, but
yeah. It's an interesting choice that it's just there. I don't. Yeah. The show never addresses it. Like
I always liked just not having an arm. I was so hyped. I loved I don't remember the dude's name anymore, but in Spider-Man 2, the guy who played Dr. Connors, and I was like, he's gonna be so good as the Lizard. But just like the folded sleeve, and I'm like, I like this a lot, you know. He's like, it's like Fury, he doesn't need an eye patch, but he wears it.
Yeah, exactly. It fucking matters. Peter's been bragging to people that he's got a job now, and then he learns that, like, Eddie lays it on him, like, you're a high school entrance, man. You're not getting paid for this shit.
Exactly.
Which this show's not going to unpack the moral implications of that. We're moving on.
Well, I mean, it's the normal. Like, that's, yes. It's true.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Peter's bombed. He asks for a sign, and it comes in the form of a Daily Bugle newspaper. And J. Jonah Jameson he's talking about Spider-Man. So he just shows up at the Daily Bugle offices. Mm-hmm. This is where we first meet JJ. Peter pitches his idea of getting Spider-Man's pictures. JJ kicks him out And then he turns to Robin and he's like, you know what we need? Some pictures of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Oh, Smee, what a superb idea I just had.
Yep.
It's, yeah, I mean, like, I love it because he is, like, Peter is making the mistakes that children would make. Where it's like, I have this idea. It's like, you need to, if you had pictures, you'd have leverage.
Yes.
Like, you can't just tell him that idea and he'll just give you something. Like, you know?
And as we'll unpack as the show goes on, I love the, like, it's not as simple as Peter takes pictures of Spider-Man. It's like, well, no, but okay. How, if you're Spider-Man,
how
what steps do you need to take to accomplish that goal?
And they kept that going. Like, that was cool. Like, I appreciate in the movie, they're like, he takes the pictures, he gets the job.
Yeah.
We don't have time. And it's perfect.
Yeah.
But with this, they're like, we have time. It's a TV show. No, he takes pictures. They suck.
Yeah.
And they're unusable.
Yeah.
And he just keeps learning how to do it better until eventually he does. Because you're like, oh, because you're watching it. And I promise you, no one's making this show going, this is someone's first Spider-Man show of all time. Like, no one knows who Spider-Man is. No, you're watching the show and you're like, I can't wait for him to work for the Daily Bugle.
Yep.
And then 100%. And you're just like, and the next episode, you're like, no, but I want him to be in the Daily Bugle.
So Spider-Man, he lost his shoes when he was fighting the Vulture the first time. He got some good gags out of that. So he goes back to Osborn's to find his shoes. This is when Vulture shows up again to attack Osborn. Meanwhile, the Enforcers show up in a helicopter. We get a fight between Spider-Man. And these are the Enforcers in the show. Ox, Fancy Dan, and Montana. there's one moment, the only moment I need to stop on the Enforcers, he's fighting them and he's kind of clowning these guys. Ox, who we learn is like almost as strong as Spider-Man, basically, tackles Spider-Man off the side of a building.
Oh my God.
And like, I was like, Ox, what was your plan here?
Yeah. Although that is a pimp move. Where he's like, can you do this? And just stops and he just goes, like, you know, just gravity. Pulls him off of him. I'm like, oh my God.
Yep. Yep. That's awesome. Solid moment. But again, it's a great moment, but I just want to know what Ox was thinking when that happened.
Well, I guess I'll kill him and me.
Yep. And I'll get paid big money for it. I don't know.
Like, you're going to die.
Yeah. So he's fighting the Enforcers and Vulture at the same time. He uses the Vulture wing. He like swings Vulture's wing into the helicopter's propellers, crashing the helicopter, taking care of both. And he gets home late with Aunt May. I love Aunt May's characterization in this it's somewhere. She's not loosey-goosey cool aunt like Marissa Tomei, but like she's on top of it, but in a very like, I think like a good way. Like, listen, you're going to be home at 10. If you're not going to be home at 10, you're going to call me. And the way they unpack this as the show goes on, great. Love it.
Yeah.
But that's where we end this. Peter Spider-Man has a curfew now.
Yep. And it's just, it's such a good idea because I remember Stan, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, any interview with Stan Lee, any conversation about these books or the behind the scenes, I would watch and try and get. And so, like, I've heard Stan talk about Spider-Man 1,000 different times in 5 different decades. And he, not that I've lived in them, but, you know.
From
the beginning. Anytime he's been filmed.
Yeah.
And he, like, he always talks about how he's like, this is a superhero where it's like, he'll have acne and he can, you know, he'll miss a date. And, you know, but all the examples he has of like relatable teenage problems, like it never happened.
Yes.
Like the acne thing never came up, you know, like he never had like these issues that like maybe occasionally, but only superficially, like it was barely a thing. Him having a curfew, his aunt being like respectful and understanding, but also firm.
Yeah.
Like these are Wiseman's interpretations of that very conceit that that Stan has been saying they've been doing forever, which like arguably they had.
And
it's just a great idea. Like,
yeah,
make Peter have teenage problems, like going to high school and it's like, oh, you're a junior.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, things are different because 3 months passed and I haven't seen these people in 3 months. So I'm a different person now. And I'm going to walk up to the cheerleader and I'm going to ask her out. Like, why do you think that would work?
And like, listen,
I'm in high school and I'm a dummy.
Like, and I think we've all been there where you look back and you're like, well, that girl was out of my league. I don't know what I was thinking when I asked her out. I don't know what
that. Yeah.
Cause it's not, I mean, listen, I say that in that, like, I wasn't doing anything to justify that. I hadn't done the work on me.
Yeah.
Why would this girl be into me? What was I thinking? What did I think I was bringing to the table at this point? So now we go into season one, episode two, Interactions. Peter Parker attempts to tutor the popular Liz Allen while Spider-Man tries to stop Electro, who will stop at nothing to find a cure for the accident that made him who he is. That's right, everybody. We had to wait five seasons to get Electro, and he was a weird Russian slash Nazi in Spider-Man animated series. Episode two, we're getting Electro, baby.
How about Electro? And it's better.
Yes, 100%. Because Electro's great. Electro's like a lot of Spider-Man villains where I don't know that he could justify carrying a movie.
No.
But his power set, Spider-Man's rogues is jam-packed with people like, how do I solve this problem? Like, what do I, the guy's living electricity, what do I do about this?
Yeah. And when they were invented, there was like issue. It was like Electro, Lizard, like Mysterio, just Doc Ock, like one after the other. And some of them are going to be, you know, timeless and the biggest villain he's ever had, and others are going to be members of a team.
Some of them are going to be Doc Ock, some of them are going to be the Enforcers, some of them are going to be Fancy Dan.
Well, I mean, you know, the Enforcers, I don't know if they were ever anybody's like favorite Spider-Man villain, because really it's like the Enforcers are the villain. Like, it's just they're called the Enforcers. I think they even worked for Green Goblin in the beginning of everything. It's just a whole thing, but
tracks.
Yeah.
So we
get Jamie Foxx's Electro could do the movie. Like,
yeah. So
the new one.
We get one of two. There's only two of my memory, and it's been a while since I watched the show. There's only two villains where I was like, I don't know that I like this origin. Electro is one of them. So Connor's, but again, we're connecting this into a mini movie we're going to sell in Walmart. So we need to connect. The overarching thing here is biology, the lizard. Connor's and Brock talk about this experiment they're doing on electric eels and rays. We don't see any stingrays. And also, I don't think stingrays are electric. I don't think that exists. So I don't know why they make that specification, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're doing this because they want clean power source. It doesn't make any sense, guys.
They said
I'm sorry.
It's clean energy.
Yeah, it's a kid's cartoon. This is where the kid's cartoon of it all comes in. And Max Dillon is there, and he's fixing the filters or something. It doesn't matter. He drops his screwdriver, and he gets shocked, which drops him into the sludge with the eels. And it's kind of like a flash, or the chemicals with the electricity. You get it. Powers. All right. If only it worked this way in real life.
I think he just gets electrocuted in the comics. Like, it's just he falls on power lines. So they need to do something to give you anything. And I'm like,
And they wouldn't have known that at the time when they were first writing it, but now you've got the perfect out. Like, he falls on power lines, and shocker, he's a mutant. Now he's got electric abilities. Done. So Max is taken to the hospital, and he needs to be handled with special gloves. So you don't get electrocuted.
Okay.
Spidey, we get this scene with, like, I don't think my Spider-Man swinging through the city. He's like, I don't think I'm not going to be able to make it. I don't think my powers will be able to help me. And all he is late for class. Flash is talking in class about how the Bugle is looking for pictures of Spidey, and the professor hands out their grades. And I love this Flash moment. He's got Flash has got a C-, and he's like, Flash successfully completes another pass.
I'm like, Flash is too clever and fun for his own good, because he is a piece of shit. But like, I'm like, I think we're laying the groundwork for, like, you hate him, but you're like, when he's not there, you're like, all right, well, I mean, I could use another Flash moment. And
Exactly. They do the same thing with JJ, where it's like, in the real world, this person would not be nearly as funny and clever or interesting. But in this fictional world, what a good like,
he's a
personal antagonist.
Yeah, no, I love him in this. And it's also setting up, like, you know, Jonah is sympathetic in his own way. Flash will eventually turn around. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Cool. This is pre-Agent Venom, but you definitely, like, God, oh, man, I wish the show had gone on forever. Liz gets a bad grade too. She needs a tutor. She's giving Peter's a tutor. This is another great exchange where she's like, what if Flash was my tutor? And the voice acting for the Professor Miles, like this, he does this weird like, no, I don't think you understand. We want your grade to go up. Good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at the hospital, Max is in need of an insulation suit. This is one of those situations. Max has been in this suit for all of like 10 minutes and he's already like flipping out. And I just wanted to be like, listen, man, you've got, I know, stressful right now, but give it a minute because you've got lightning powers. And so maybe take a second to figure this out, because that could be really fucking cool, man, if you just took a breath.
That's true. Although I do, you know, this is the first time I ever thought about it, because he's wearing a suit, right? It's really claustrophobic. He's got this mask on. He's lying in bed. Yeah. You know, it's like if you're in a hospital bed, you should be wearing like a gown, and like you should have contact with sheets. And he is like in a rubber suit. And I can imagine them going, we're going to figure it out. And it's like, you know, you're clearly like, you know, decades into your lizard technology, like you haven't figured it out. You're not going to suddenly like do a hard left and figure out how to cure electricity powers.
Yep.
So it's just kind of like, what a body horror situation this could have been and could be in the future, where like I'm stuck in this suit. And if I take it off, I don't even feel anything. I can't even drink anything. I'm blasting electricity all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
I think they're definitely going around. It reminded me a lot of what they did in Superman, the animated series, with Metallo.
Yeah,
where it's like, great, you've got these abilities, but you are now completely incapable of human interaction.
Oh yeah, that was awesome. What a good episode that was.
Yep.
Oh, Malcolm McDowell is freaking brainy as Metallo. What a stroke of genius.
Yeah. Good shows. Good shows. All those Justice League, Tim Bruce, Tim Justice League shows. Good shows. So he's pissy. He escapes. Meanwhile, Liz is trying to Peter's trying to tutor Liz, and she is not being great about it, let's just say.
No,
she's not being pleasant.
Yeah, but she's being very realistic about it. Like, I really, I was like, this is a good scene. Like, even, I think this is the scene when I'm watching the show. Like, I didn't watch it as it was coming out until much later.
Yeah.
But it still was a show. It was alive. Like, it was being broadcast on Disney XD at this time when I was watching the show. And I saw the scene and I was like, this is a good show. Yeah. Like, this is a good interaction. I really like it. Like, people have agency in this show, and I'm like, that's really cool.
And it's so challenging to write good and or interesting high school characters.
Oh my god.
Because high schoolers aren't particularly interesting. We like to do media in that, because everything, when you're high school, everything feels larger than life. Like all the stakes always feel so dramatic. Mm-hmm. But I think adults really struggle to capture that. And Liz is still a character on the show, so therefore more interesting than your typical high schooler, but behaves in a way, her interactions with Peter and throughout the episode are believable. I'm like, we've had those. I get it.
Well, and she's like, she's trying so hard. You know what I mean? Like, you're just kind of, for me, I'm like, you know, she's so used to having an audience. Not like that she's like a drama queen or anything, but she's so used to having an audience when it's like, when Peter is around, it's because we're in a group of people, we make fun of Peter.
Yeah.
And we feel better about ourselves. Mm-hmm. She doesn't realize, like, it's like, not only is it cruel to do it in a group, but like, it's just the two of you. You can let the guard down a little bit, like as a duo. And she's doing it like for like an invisible audience.
Yeah.
You know, and she's still, because she's kind of on autopilot, because she's like not challenged or thinking about anything.
Yeah.
And when Peter like reacts to her like a human being, because he doesn't have, like, he's not playing a part. Like, we're not doing this thing where, like, you know, Flash is there and they're all doing the thing. And I just, because he says it later when Flash for no reason throws water balloons at him. Mm-hmm. And they're like, don't just stand there and take it. And he's like, that's what you do when you're a nerd. You just do that until they get bored and move on. But he's like, I'm not going to, like, look, my teacher told me to sit here with you.
Yeah.
And you're like on your phone throwing like zingers like you're on an episode of The Golden Girls.
Yeah.
I got to go.
Yeah.
You know, and his reaction is priceless. So,
well, and this is another great use of the duality here, because low key, I think there's actually a really interesting character thing going on in that, you know, when... most of the people listening to the show, most of the people in our circle, we grew up nerds, right? And you struggle with your self-confidence, and people respond to confidence. I think a lot of times, especially in like internet influencer culture, that gets tied up in like ego and a lot of toxic traits.
Totally.
Or like kind of like being an asshole. But that's not what it is. What it is confidence, being self-assured. Yeah. And so Peter as you're pointing out with Liz, she's kind of on autopilot, and Peter is kind of fitting into the role he's fit in until Spider-Man shit starts going down. And he's like, and it's this weird, none of this shit. I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care about tutoring Liz. I gotta go save people. And it's in that moment, that little spark of like, wait, Liz is like, wait, do I like Peter?
Right. I love that. It just his, you need this more than me. I gotta go. Call me when you're serious. And I was like, wow. Like, like, oh, cue, and that gets, cue the reaction meme.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I think like when you think about like the the game or whatever where they talk about negging and shit.
Oh god, yeah.
You could look at this as that, but that's not what's all he's doing. He's not putting her down. He's just asserting himself. Like, hey, here are my boundaries. You know what I mean?
Like, 45 minutes of this is inappropriate.
Yeah.
But like, you know what it is? It's he's Spider-Man in that moment.
Yes.
You know, he's like, Spider-Man would say this, you know, Peter would be like, well, Liz, you know, cause he was for 45 minutes or whatever, for the entirety of their meet. Yeah. He's been like, yeah, whatever. Okay. Then he's like, all right, well, you don't need, you know, you need this more than me. Call me when you're serious. Pew!
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what Spider-Man would say. And it's, and it's in that moment, of course, where she's
and
like,
now that we're getting into that, it is an interesting about like, because obviously in the show gets into this too, the struggle of like, should I even be Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And the realization like, Peter, you actually really need you as a person need Spider-Man. Like,
yes, like you're better when you're Spider-Man. Like,
and if you could ever
balancing it.
Anyway. Yeah. If you could ever figure out how to like get those two halves to like kiss and make up, things would be easier for you.
It's always, you know what the solution, it's always just tell the people, the very small group of people around you who you are. So they don't go, oh boy, that nephew, he was a real hero. Like,
dude. I'd suck at the secret identity thing. Cause episode one, Vulture's attacking my best friend's dad. I would have a moment. Harry, I'm Spider-Man, by the way. I gotta go take care of this. We'll attack this later. Bye.
Yeah. When Gwen is like, when the Connorses and Gwen are horribly disappointed in him, it's like,
By episode two, a half dozen people would know that I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah, and by episode three, everyone would know.
Everyone would know, and people, my loved ones would be being targeted. Exactly. Anyway, so he blows off Liz. He fights Electro. And like the first thing he does is yank off Electro's mask, not realizing, oopsies, big mistake.
Yeah.
This is an electric man. So great use of the deadline. Peter is in the middle of fight Electro. We've established he's got a little alarm that's like, here's when I need to call May, because I need to call May if I'm not home by 10. Uh-huh. And so he's in mid fight with Electro being like, hey May, I'm gonna be late.
yep. We do that for three episodes where he's like, hey, I'm 2 minutes before my curfew. I'm good to go. I did it. And it's like, that is also a kid thing where it's like, I am technically correct. The best kind of correct.
The best kind of correct. Good Futurama reference. I just watched that episode, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm now in a position to get that reference. And I love, I don't remember where it is. I probably have in my notes, but May has a very great moment where she's like, but this does not count, by the way. I wasn't just like, call me at 10 every night. I want you to be home by 10. You're abusing the limits of our thing. It's like, that's good. That's just good parenting shit.
It is good parenting. Yeah. And it's like, and Peter learns from it. It's not just like 94 Peter would just leave.
Yes. Yeah.
and he would be like a dick about it.
Yeah.
And then we would just be in another episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we don't refer to because each episode is someone's first episode. So let's just not worry about it. Oh, also it's part 12.
Yes. He'd be pouting on the side of a building. Like, why can't I just do this? Even though he's in college, like, why is May giving you fucking,
why do you even live with her right now? What are you doing, man?
What's happening? You look like a 30-year-old man. Fucking get out of there.
In a hilarious striped shirt. Yes. Did you know that Disney sold that? Like, I think at the parks, they have the Peter Parker 94 shirt, but they have an awful Spider-Man embroidery on it. I'm like, no.
I hate that they do that, man. Just do the shirt.
Right?
Have the Spider-Man be on, like, the tag on the inside. Like,
exactly.
Yeah,
it might as well say Spider-Man on the back of it or something. Yeah. Like, you've just, it's like wearing a Batman costume and it says Batman on it. Like,
dude, they had, last time I was at Disney, they had an Xavier Institute cap, like, as if it was, like, a school cap. That shit was, like, $50, man. It's like, I'm not fucking, are you fucking kidding me?
don't waste your time. Go to Universal.
Yeah.
You'll get a way better hat. Actually, my wife has this dope. It's black and yellow. Black on this side, stripe in the middle, big metal X on it.
Dope.
It is fire.
Yeah.
And I bought that crap at Universal Studios. I was like, oh, right, Marvel Land.
Mm-hmm.
Gobbled up everything. They had
somehow
they had,
still a thing.
I love it. They have Doom bots, like Doom's like robots. They're like, they flank this store, and I'm like, these are just fiberglass made in 1998.
Yeah.
How much for the Doombot?
Yeah, and yeah. You're probably about a couple months away from tearing all this down. How much for the Doombots?
Give me the Doom. Just let me have it. You know. But and you know the poor broke college kid from Florida is like, sir, if you're not gonna buy anything, just get out, please.
I'm trying to buy the Doombot, sir. Yeah,
I'm trying to make a transaction here, dude. Universal, no magic, right? Yeah. You go to Harry Potter World, they're like, what, here's your butterbeer.
yeah.
It's like, oh, you're not even going to do a fake accent? No.
Yeah.
No, great. I'm not. Here, thanks. Where you're in Ollivander's, it looks amazing. And then they're like, here's your wand.
Listen, it's one of the areas that, you know, we benefit out here in California. A lot of out-of-work actors, all right? So they are in it to win it.
They must. I hope so. Well, they're all, like, auditioning to get to Disney, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go to Mario Land. We're on a tangent. We need to.
I know.
We're on a tangent and running long.
I gotta try out Mario Land. Although it's small. It looks small to me.
It does look small. Oh, I'm waiting. Big fans of Halloween Horror Nights over here. So I'm hoping that maybe we like to do the pass where you get the day pass with the Halloween Horror Nights. Don't know. Sometimes it doesn't cover the other lands. We'll see.
Get some booze in there. Some dry bones.
Yeah, I'm waiting. Also waiting until school's back in session. You know what I mean?
I yeah.
So Pete shows up at the lab. This is where he finds out that it was Max. This is a great version of every personal trauma they tried to interject in the Spider-Man animated series. Where it's this where, like, oh shit, if I'd known it was Max, I treat him
I
like
wouldn't
a
have been
dick.
Such a dick about it.
Yeah. Fucking great, man. Fucking because it's like, again, this is it's not his fault, but you can see yourself feeling the same way. Like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
So Max is met by the cops at his place. Here's the note of where the other cop is. We got Gene DeWolf. We've also got Stan Carter, aka Sin Eater.
Yeah.
Which I can't imagine a kid cartoon ever doing Sin Eater, but he's there. He's
although there. I love that it's like, yep, I'm the woman right here. I'm going to murder her with a shotgun one day.
Yeah. Who's voiced, and you can tell the second you hear the voice, it's voiced by Tom Wilson, aka Biff from Back to the Future.
Awesome.
So Liz shows up at the lab for their study session. Pete, again, in a situation where Pete is confident with science, he's able to show off the stupid eels that I don't like to Liz. She's kind of into it. Gwen's not. Little hints of Gwen's feelings for Peter.
Yeah.
Max shows up at the lab. He's really flipping out. Here we get to another thing I love about this show where we do action sequences in different, like, distinct locations. So Vulture was obviously Skyline Spider-Man shit, but this is on the campus. Specifically, we get a fight around, I guess it's the campus radio station because it's like a radio tower.
I just assumed it was the local radio station.
Yeah. The local, New York's local radio station. We get a moment where, and this is another great thing that I think superhero properties try to do sometimes, where like in a different reality, Eddie's the hero because Eddie's like, I'm going to distract him. And it's like, dude, Spider-Man's here. We don't need you.
Slow your roll.
Yeah. Eddie distracts Max so the others can escape. Max accidentally zaps Connor's lizard concoction. Put a pin in that for later. This is where we get another where Max decides, I'm Electro now. Whatever, man.
Sure.
Again, another really great fight between Spider-Man and Electro. He's using the glove we established earlier to keep himself from being shocked.
Mm-hmm.
We established earlier that even though the eel concoction is water, and they actually do a pretty good job justifying this, like the eels evolved to live in water. Max hasn't. So water, no good, bad for Max. This is where we get another call with May, and May correctly reads Peter the Riot Act. Like, this isn't what we agreed on, okay?
Yep, love it.
Spidey takes out Electro by kicking him into the school pool.
Yeah.
Wrap up the episode. Liz is sending Pete Mad McSignal. She's kind of flirting with him until Flash and the rest of the crew show up, and then the switch flips.
Boom. Yeah. Exactly.
But what they do an interesting job thing here where they connect the ideas between Gwen shows up and she's like, sorry, Liz was a bitch to you. And Peter's like, well, you know what? I reached out and she can either accept it or not. And that connects to the, like, I shouldn't take personal responsibility for Max. I did try to help him.
Exactly.
He just wasn't having it. It's like, look at you all doing some basic writing and stuff, yeah. Connecting plot lines and subtext and shit. Look at this.
And it's wonderful because, like, it is at the end of the day, like a children's cartoon. So you're like, you're imparting morality, but you're also doing it in like a subtle way that allows for kids to, like, you know, recognize, like, you know, maybe having agency or authority or not taking too much responsibility for things they don't have control over. It's just smart. I'm like, this is really, really cool. It's doing a lot of work and almost flawlessly, you know, like without any effort.
Yeah, this is like a golden age, because I want to say Avatar The Last Airbender was around the same time of like, hey, let's not necessarily like treat kids like adults, but do treat them as people that can hold ideas in their head and and grapple with somewhat complex ideas. They're capable of that. So let's treat them that way.
Yeah.
And we stood now big blockbuster movies that are ostensibly for adults struggle with that shit. So, hey, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, that's it for episode one of our Spectacular Spider-Man coverage. Sal, where can kids find you?
Well, swing on by YouTube and go to youtube.com/comicpop and Comic Pop Returns, and you'll see me and my friends chatting about comics all day long. It's a lot of fun. Check them out.
God damn it. Do it. There'll be links in the description. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash everywhere that matters. Hopefully blue sky soon. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. And we'll see you all next time, everybody.